Well, you've tuned into No Nonsense Nutrition. And likely you've tuned into No Nonsense Nutrition because you want information about how to get healthier. And you know, it's a magic time of the year. It's a magic time of the year because the fruit trees are giving us that amazing bounty that we know as stone fruits. Now, I bet you never wrote stone fruits on your shopping list, but anything that's got a pit in the middle of it, it's a stone fruit. So peaches and nectarines, cherries, apricots, and plums, that's our subject for the day. And the reason it is because I went into a local market a week ago and was able to buy Myakka peaches. Right, you don't think of Florida and peaches in the same sentence very often, especially not as far south as Myakka. But two different species of peaches have been bred, not genetically engineered, just grafted and cross-harvested, in order to grow in this tropical clime. And I'm here to tell you it can really happen. I was gifted with a peach tree last year. It's a little wiener of a tree right now, only about 4 feet tall, but it actually put out its blossoms and set its fruit. And of course, with a brand new tree, you don't want to let it bear fruit because you want all the energy going to developing the root system and not developing the fruit, at least not for the first couple of years. Actually, what happened is I didn't have to edit the fruit off there. The squirrels did it for me. And so I'm always reminded of my buddy Michael Clark's recipe for squirrel and peach stew. That's a little joke for all of you animal lovers out there. But nonetheless, peaches can grow right here in Sarasota County. And so think of the joy of walking out the door and taking a peach right off your tree. Yeah, cool. So a year or two from now, after my tree gets a little developed, I'll be able to do that. But in the meantime, I had those Myakka peaches. And you know, when I bought them, they didn't say organic on them. And so I knew I had to peel them carefully because peaches end up usually top of the list of all of the foods that are contaminated with pesticides and fungicides. More than any other single fruit, it's such a heartache to say this, peaches could have as many as 14 different pesticides used on them. Sure, if a bug takes a bite out of it, you don't want to. So they have to be kept beautiful. And all the fruit that needs to be as perfect as possible is the fruit that more likely than not gets sprayed heavily. So the Myakka peaches, I have to tell you, I bought them anyway and I enjoyed them and I peeled them carefully. And they were a clingstone peach. Remember, peaches have two forms, clingstone and freestone. And mostly what we eat out of hand are the freestone ones. The meat pulls apart from the seed easily. But this particular species was a clingstone, but I got to tell you, it was some kind of delicious. And it was really early to have those peaches, and that may be the big advantage of Florida peaches, because generally speaking, peaches are not going to show up in the marketplace until just about Memorial Day. Depends on what the weather is like, but right around Memorial Day, which isn't too far away, the peaches are going to show up in the marketplace. And then you're going to get an opportunity to enjoy that fresh, sweet taste. You know, a medium peach only has about 35 to 40 calories in it. And it makes a tremendously fabulous source of beta carotene. You know, we don't give beta carotene enough credit. People let that word just kind of roll off their tongue like they really know what it means. But in fact, carotenoids or carotenoids are a class of chemicals, and those class of chemicals exist as more than just pretty colors. You know, the eyes always eat first. That's why chefs put so much effort into presentation to liven up the plate. So every time we put a vivid vegetable on the plate, it livens it up. Who wants to sit down to a beige piece of chicken with beige mashed potatoes with white cauliflower? I mean, please. When we look at nature's colorful bounty, it doesn't matter whether it's that emerald bed of lettuce or a scarlet tomato wedge or a bright orange sliver of carrot. We use it as warmth. to fill up the empty spaces between the meat and the potatoes. But now we know that carotenoids are more than pretty colors. People who eat the most carotenoid-rich yellow, orange, and red vegetables, whether they're pumpkins and sweet potatoes, watermelons and sweet peppers, or our good old buddy peaches, have significantly lower risks of dying from heart disease and cancer. Now, sometimes we have foods that have carotenes in them. Again, they're yellow and orange and red, and they're hidden by the green chlorophyll. So that would be the case for things like spinach and kale, where you don't see the yellow and the orange and the red, but it's underneath that chlorophyll that's masking it. So how can food coloring be so good for you? Because it comes down to chemistry. You know, our bodies are constantly under attack by free radicals. And no, those are not college students from Berkeley. Oxygen molecules that have lost an electron. Remember, electrons happen in pairs. And these molecules that have lost an electron zip through the body trying to steal replacement electrons from healthy cells. And in time, this process causes internal damage to the tissue in the body, possibly contributing to heart disease, cancer, and other very serious health conditions. But the carotenoids that are in fruits and vegetables neutralize the free radicals by offering up their own electrons and stops in its tracks that destructive process and helps to keep your cells from being damaged. You know, carotenoids certainly seem important in disease prevention. And so when we look at the nature of eating a rainbow really is one of the tremendous keys to health. So when we get red lycopene and orange beta carotene and yellow lutein, all of these may be names that you've heard before, but probably you haven't heard the names of the other 500 carotenoids, but really about 50 of them occur in the food that we eat on a regular basis. So more commonly, you've heard of beta-carotene, lutein, and lycopene, and less commonly, you might have heard of alpha-carotene, gamma-carotene, beta-cryptoxanthin, zeaxanthin, lots of them. Ever since they first started talking about hardening of the arteries, doctors began to find out that people that had high carotenoid-rich fruits and vegetables in their diet, like peaches, had healthier hearts because it kept the LDL, the low-density lipoprotein, the bad or the lousy cholesterol on your blood test, from oxidizing. We don't want that LDL to oxidize, because when it does, it becomes rancid, and it's like rancid fats. I always use the example of putting a nut meat in your mouth when the nut has gone bad and you can't spit it out fast enough. That's a rancid fat. So when you oxidize LDL, this low-density lipoprotein, it causes it to stick more easily to the artery walls. And so it's believed that carotenoids contribute to heart health by preventing this dangerous LDL cholesterol from oxidizing. When we look at the power of these carotenoids, I remember the study that was done at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore that found smokers who even had a heart attack already were less likely to have a second heart attack if they had high levels of beta-carotene, lutein, lycopene, and zeaxanthin. So those four carotenoids provided protection. The same process by which carotenoids protect against heart disease also seems to protect against cancer. Researchers believe that these compounds, by neutralizing free radicals, prevent the damage to the DNA. That's the material that tells the cells how to behave. University of Arizona in Tucson found out that 30 milligrams of beta-carotene had the ability to shrink precancerous lesions in the mouth by as much as 50%. Department of Veterans Affairs really discovered among their vets that the ones that had these high levels of beta carotene and other carotenoids had cancers that didn't as progress as often. So whether it's the pigment that gives tomatoes their rosy glow, that also shows up in watermelons and guavas and pink grapefruits, or the one that makes peaches the beautiful bright yellow orange color, and realize that we only had yellow peaches since about 1850. Prior to that, all peaches were white. So now we think white peaches are the novelty, but actually they were the more original species. We bred in that yellow color just about 150 years ago. So we know that people that have the most of this carotenoid in their diet get less cancer. Doesn't make any difference whether it's that bright red from tomatoes and watermelon and pink grapefruit and guava, or whether it's the orange that comes from peaches and cantaloupes and papayas and apricots and other of the stone fruits that we're going to talk about. It's good for the eyes. You know, when we look at Popeye having his spinach every day, he was trying to get carotenoids. You know, when you eat spinach and collard greens, I had Swiss chard the other night. The ones that eat it on a very regular basis, you know, virtually every day, have half the risk for macular degeneration of people who don't ever eat it. So carotenoids seem to be responsible to block free radicals, not only in the retina, but in the DNA, in the cell itself. And by the time I put together butternut squash and kale and tomatoes and make a stew out of them, I've got an antioxidant celebration going on there as far as carotenoids are concerned. So let's come back to this nifty family of stone fruits. I was talking to a client on Friday, and he mentioned to me that he got reactivity pretty frequently from eating any kind of tomatoes or eating any kind of peaches or nectarines. And so I had to let him know that peaches and nectarines, and really all the stone fruits, are like almonds. They're from the rose family. And sometimes if people are reactive to one, they're reactive to others. But these foods also contain a compound called salicylates. And you've heard of salicylic acid. Salicylic acid is what we find aspirin being made up. And so when we look at salicylic acid, it shows up in various fruits and vegetables. And some individuals are reactive to aspirin, and those are the individuals that are also going to be reactive to members of the rose family. Yeah, from roses to almonds to peaches. Who knew? Peaches and nectarines are both fruits of this Prunus persica, named after Persia. You know, nectarines are just varieties with a smooth skin. They're usually smaller, firmer, more aromatic, and they're also much higher in sugar and, as a result, calories. You know, the words peach and persica come from Persia by way of the fruit that reached the Mediterranean from China, because all of the stone fruits originate in Asia. You know, the modern peach and nectarine varieties fall into a handful of categories. We can have, like I said earlier, white or yellow fruit. We could have firm or what's called in the trade melting fruit. When we look at the genetically dominant characteristic of a peach, it's white, it's melting, and it's freestone. So when the developers back in the 1840s and 50s began to create the clingstone varieties because they wanted one that was bred mainly for drying and canning and improved tolerance for shipping, the yellow coloration from the carotenoid pigments, beta-carotene among them, and even the even rarer red varieties of peaches, which I only had when I was living in Colorado, that actually contain anthocyanins like the skin does, these peaches really were just selectively bred. You know, there are people that are constantly trying to breed unique qualities into fruit. You know, if you had a fruit orchard and you had the biggest tree and you had the tastiest tree and you had the most prolific tree, you might do the same thing. You might graft those trees onto a good quality rootstock and try to multiply the qualities that you liked in that particular species. And that's exactly what happened with peaches. You know, peaches start to ripen at the stem end and along the groove or the suture. And so they will continue their flavor development a little bit after they're picked, but not a whole lot. You know, that aromatic flavor of peaches and nectarines largely comes from a series of chemical compounds called lactones, the same thing that makes almonds smell like almonds, coconut smell like coconut. And so when we look at getting peaches into the diet, the first thing that we're looking at is the benefit of the beta carotene. But that's not the only stone fruit. You know, stone fruits are all from the genus Prunus, members of the rose family. They all owe their name to that hard shell that surrounds the single large seed in their center. And so even though we know that all of these things come from Asia, we've made it our own. The only thing we don't like about them is when the internal tissues start to get mealy and break down if there's been prolonged cold storage. So you know that when you bring your peaches home, you don't really want to stick them in the refrigerator. What you want to do is leave them on the counter and try to eat them quickly before they get funky. If you got to keep them more than a couple of days, you're probably going to have to stick them in the refrigerator, but then you're going to have much more likelihood that they can either get mealy or they can break down. But that usually happens only if you leave them in there for a week. When we look at stone fruits, we find that they contain an indigestible sugar alcohol called sorbitol, and you've probably seen that name on the sugar-free gum, sorbitol gum or xylitol gum. That is a sugar alcohol, and it is frequently an ingredient in sugar-free candy and sugar-free gum. And so that's one of the things that may in fact help these work as a laxative, help them work just to keep the bowel working well. But it's this richness of their antioxidant phenols that really is the health benefit that comes to us from eating these stone fruits. And so since we're just about to start into the 3 or 4 months of availability, you know, for us, peaches show up first just because of the Georgia peach crop. But generally speaking, the first trees that come in are the cherries. And so we're going to be seeing cherries here pretty quick. And almost everybody knows the folklore about cherries treating gout. Well, they're right. There's no question about the fact that cherries are considered part of a gout program. But recent studies indicate that the powerful antioxidants in cherries, known as anthocyanins, may play a role in reducing inflammation and risk factors for heart disease. Regular listeners to No Nonsense Nutrition know that anthocyanins is one of my favorite words, and it is that dark red, purple, blue pigment that will show up in everything from prunes to dark grapes to blueberries. The latest research, which was conducted by the University of Michigan, a big cherry-eating state, gives even more reasons to eat red. Eat Red is their cherry-eating campaign. A cherry-enriched diet may help lower body fat, total weight, inflammation, and cholesterol. That's a pretty nice list. While inflammation is a normal process in the body to fight off infection or injury, a chronic state of inflammation increases the risk for diseases. And that's true across the board. It doesn't matter where that inflammation is. According to the American Heart Association, if you're overweight or obese, especially if the weight is concentrated around the middle, you're at higher risk for heart disease. And since nearly 2 out of 3 Americans are overweight at this point, emerging studies are really looking at who ends up with the disease process and who doesn't. And since heart disease is the number one killer of Americans today, we got to keep researching things that reduce heart disease. So the cardiac surgeons at the University of Michigan Cardiovascular Center did a study in getting people to eat cherries. And this, you know, isn't an exotic fruit. I see individuals all the time. They come into my practice and they tell, oh, well, I'm eating goji berries, and oh, I'm drinking acai juice, and oh, I have mangosteen. And, you know, they're talking about all of these exotic fruits. Well, there's nothing really exotic about blueberries and cherries, and yet they contain the same benefits. They took rats, and you know, rats get used pretty regularly for studies. And they used tart cherry powder in their diet. You know, rats don't sit around and eat cherries. So they take this tart cherry powder and they put it in the rat food. And after 12 weeks, the cherry-fed rats had a 14% lower body fat compared with the other rats. The cherry diet reduced the total cholesterol and two of the major markers for inflammation that are related to the development of heart disease. So it appears that cherries are getting a better rap than simply getting rid of the uric acid that contributes to arthritis and to gout. Now, even though cherries are only available to you in season for a pretty short period of time, usually about 10 weeks, sometimes 15 weeks, you know, if this weather is kind to us, we could start cherries about the 1st of June and still be getting Western Slope Colorado cherries down into September. That would be a pretty long season for us, about 15 weeks. But sometimes the cherries are going to come in all at once and you're only going to get fresh cherries for a few weeks. Get them while you can. And again, we have to remember, these are the category of fruits that often have pesticide residues. So if you're not buying organic, you want to make sure that they are rinsed well and not just turn on the faucet and, you know, run the fruit underneath the water, but actually agitate the water so that we can try to get as much of that pesticide residue off of them as possible. But, you know, cherries, which fall into two categories, the sweet and the tart, way more tart cherries are grown than sweet cherries. And those tart cherries are made into jams and jellies and all kinds of condiments and even liqueurs. But the frozen cherries, whoa, you can always take a handful of frozen cherries and put them in with your yogurt in the morning and make a smoothie out of them, or just take a handful of those frozen cherries and let them defrost overnight in the refrigerator and add them to your bowl of fruit. Just like blueberries, raspberries, and the other small, darkly colored fruit, you're going to get this tremendous bonanza of these anthocyanin compounds and just the fact that they're freaking delicious. When we look beyond peaches and when we look beyond nectarines, we have to remember that it isn't just beta carotene that's going to give you the benefit. You're also going to get vitamin C in everything from apricots to plums. So when we look at this whole family of stone fruits, we begin to see that as we follow Mother Nature's season and start with the peaches and the cherries and then move on into the nectarines and the plums and finally into the apricots, we're getting care for our nerves and our muscles because these things are loaded with potassium. You know, two small peaches have more minerals than a medium-sized banana. Everybody gives banana the press for potassium, but there's more potassium in a slice of avocado or a baked potato than there ever was in a banana. I think banana just got a good PR agent. But when we begin to look at the rest of this family, we have to put a new eyeball on plums. You know, plums may be the new superfood. For some time, blueberries have really been at the top of the superfruit league, but Texas research is doing a lot to say that the humble plum could turn around and give a lot of, well, a lot of competition to the blueberry. When we look at the intense coloring of things like blueberries. That intense coloring also shows up on plums. And so as these antioxidants block the action of damaging chemicals, these free radicals, plums win every time. We know that there may actually be more health-boosting plant chemicals than the big PR that's done on blueberries. Now, I'm happy to say we can grow blueberries in Florida, too. But the Texas team really began to measure the antioxidant content of all sorts of different types of blueberries and compared them to the varieties of plums and nectarines and peaches. And they found out that these high levels of antioxidants that showed up in plums had the most power. And that power is called the ORAC level, oxygen radical absorptance capacity. It's a method of measuring the antioxidant capacities in any kind of biological sample. And wide varieties of foods have been tested using this methodology. So whether they're spices or berries or legumes or vegetables, the ORAC value is evaluated. And it's given a number. And so we've been seeing now some press on the ORAC value of these exotic berries is higher than the ORAC value of blueberries or the ORAC value of plums and prunes. But in fact, you always have to look at amount. I remember when I was reading a summary and it showed that small red beans and red kidney beans, you know, had these sky high numbers of ORAC value. But you have to remember a half a cup of dried beans is going to make almost 2 cups of cooked beans. And there aren't a whole lot of people that sit down and eat 2 cups of cooked beans at once. So probably out of all of the ORAC values that have been established, blueberries and cranberries still end up at the top of the list. But prunes, which come from plums, are right behind it. People have a tendency to just eat a few blueberries at a time, you know, a few on the cereal or, you know, is ingredient mixed in something that's got a lot of sugar, but people will eat a whole plum at once and get the benefit of it. And so when we begin to look at plums, we see something that has such a panorama of colors. I think now you can go into the market, especially as we get into July, and you'll see those purple, black, blue-black plums, and you'll see reddish, purpley ones, and you'll even see yellow plums. Well, it's rare that we get iron in a fruit, and yet the iron and vitamin C that are together in the prune and in its dried version, the plum, really help to build a strong immune system and good blood because the body needs to have vitamin C in order to absorb iron. When we look at vitamin C, it also helps to prevent cholesterol from getting oxidized by free radicals. But vitamin C also helps us to build good collagen, good connective tissue in the body. We get that protection against macular degeneration that's going to happen as a result of people getting these antioxidants like vitamin A, vitamin C, and vitamin E, and those nifty carotenoids. So adding diced plums to your morning breakfast, your lunchtime yogurt, it's a great snack. What could be better than a cool, sweet, juicy plum on a summer's day? And you know, when we talk about it being a good source of vitamin A, you have to remember there really isn't any vitamin A in fruits and vegetables. There's beta carotene, which your body turns into vitamin A. But when we look at the 2,000 different species of plums that are out there, I double dog dare you to eat one of each of them. There's actually about 100 of them that are available in the United States. But try all of the red and purple and blue, black and orange and amber and green that show up this year. Now, when plums are dried, they become the fruit we know as prunes. And, you know, they've recently gotten an FDA regulation, US Department of Agriculture regulation has been changed so that we can now call prunes dried plums, because prunes apparently had a bad rap. We didn't think of prunes as anything but something that people 9,000 years old ate when they hadn't had a bowel movement since 1976. Yes, we think of prunes as a laxative, but prunes are probably going to become the new superfruit. So even though its name has officially been changed to dry plums, it's a prune. And it has a couple of unique phytonutrients: neochlorogenic acid and chlorogenic acid. And I know that you woke up this morning and said, what I'd really like to have in my hand is a nice juicy package of chlorogenic acid. But again, these compounds are classified as phenols, and those are antioxidants. They're absolutely fabulously effective in neutralizing a particularly dangerous oxygen radical called a superoxide anion radical. And that's where they work the best. So not only do we get the antioxidant protection of our good buddy beta carotene that turns into vitamin A, not only do we get the potassium that we need for cardiovascular health and for, you know, helping our muscles, but we get fiber. And we normalize blood sugar levels, because the soluble fiber that's in prunes helps to slow the rate at which food leaves the stomach and delays the absorption of glucose. But we get fiber for regularity and intestinal protection. You know, a lot of people don't realize that the transit time of fecal matter that goes through the bowel really has to do with the risk of colon cancer. The longer that somebody has that old material in their bowel, the greater the chances that gnarly chemicals are affecting the skin. Prunes and soluble fiber actually provides food for the friendly bacteria. It absolutely increases the multiplying number of that friendly bacteria. And what happens is when the bacteria ferment the prunes in soluble fiber, they create something called an SCFA, a short chain fatty acid. This is really what your bowel runs on. Your bowel doesn't run on glucose like your eyes blink because of glucose and you walk across the room because of glucose and you have a conversation because of glucose. But the bowel doesn't run on glucose. It runs on SCFAs, short chain fatty acids. And when bacteria interact with this insoluble fiber that shows up in prunes and plums, it creates this really nifty compound called butyric acid. And that is the primary fuel for the cells of the large intestine, and it helps to maintain a healthy colon. Propionic acid and acetic acid are also created by this interaction between bacteria and fiber, and they're used by fuel for the cells of the liver and the muscles. The propionic acid that is produced from the prunes and soluble fiber may be in part the reason that cholesterol is lowered when people are on a high fiber diet. Plus, propionic acid actually inhibits the same enzyme that manufactures cholesterol. So lowering blood cholesterol can happen just as a result of getting up and eating a prune every morning. Not only that, the soluble fiber in prunes helps to lower cholesterol because it binds bile acids and it removes them from the body. Bile acids are very irritating, and that's especially true for those of you that have had your gallbladder out. Because once you've had your gallbladder thrown in the garbage dump, then your body doesn't regulate the release of bile acids. It releases bile from the gallbladder. In a person with a gallbladder, the bile is released according to the demands of the meal. In other words, if you eat a high-fat meal, then you release a bunch of bile. And if you don't eat a high-fat meal, you don't release a bunch of bile. But when people don't have a gallbladder, the bile just comes out all the time. So when we look at that, we can bind up some of that bile acid, which is irritating to the nerves, when we have the soluble fiber that shows up in prunes. You know, the Archives of Internal Medicine really confirmed that eating high-fiber foods such as prunes helped to prevent heart disease. There were 10,000 American adults that participated in a study that was done for 19 years. And people who ate the most fiber had a significantly lower coronary heart disease rate and less cardiovascular disease. Now, when we see this reductions, you know, 15% reductions, and you think, well, 15%, that doesn't sound like a big number. That's a huge number. That's one out of six people. We don't have a drug that gives us that kind of promise. So this insoluble fiber that's provided by prunes feeds friendly bacteria, helps to maintain a larger population of friendly bacteria, makes these short-chain fatty acids, gives us the fiber, and it turns out that this is protective against breast cancer. They did a study with almost 52,000 postmenopausal women, and they studied them for over 8 years, and they found out that there was more than a third reduction in breast cancer risk for those that consume the most fruit fiber compared to those who consume the least. There was a subgroup of women in that study who had used hormone replacement, but if they consume the most fiber, they had a 50% reduction in their breast cancer risk. So whether it was apples or dates or figs or pears or prunes, the idea is that we get this high fruit fiber, it benefits so many systems within the body. You know, this process of drying plums and making them into prunes started thousands of years ago. And, you know, this is a really terrific one. I went to the Middle Eastern restaurant down on the South Trail and had a tagine, which is cooked in a clay pot, and it was chicken that was done with prunes. And they just added a delightful caramelized sweetness to the dish. I have a client who makes a compote out of prunes and soaks them and stews them and puts it on top of pancakes or waffles. And so prunes also make a really delicious addition to poultry stuffing. But I do have to remind you that plums and prunes contain oxalic acid. Now, these are naturally occurring substances. They're found in plants, everything from rhubarb to chocolate. And these oxalates can become too concentrated in body fluids and crystallize. And so some people who have kidney stones actually have oxalic acid kidney stones. They don't have calcium kidney stones. When I lived in Arizona, I had plum trees in my yard in Sedona. And I was doing a fruit fast once a week. And so for 7 years, every Friday, I ate fruit from the time I got up until the time I went to bed, nothing else. Did a fruit fast every Friday. And when the plums came in, I decided I would do a fruit fast of plums. Well, when you're eating nothing but that fruit all day long, it's pretty easy to eat a couple of dozen plums in a day. And I was up to about 26 plums at the point that I felt my kidneys start to hurt. And you know, your kidneys are about the size of the palm of your hand, just above your waistline, out toward your flanks, toward the sides of your back. And I just felt a little ache. And all of a sudden, that light bulb went on that said, Eve, plums are high in oxalic acid. Maybe you shouldn't fast all day on plums. And so I never did that again. But remember that plums and their buddies prunes, very high in that vitamin A precursor known as beta carotene, lots of dietary fiber, excellent sources of potassium, and one of the things that helps keep the color in your hair, copper. You got to have some copper in order to keep pigment in your hair. So let's put the prunes and plums on the list, along with the peaches and the nectarines and the cherries, as we're looking at the stone fruits of the summer. But what was exciting to me was finding out that breast cancer cells, even the most aggressive type, died after treatments with peach and plum extracts in lab tests that they did in Texas at the AgriLife Research Center. Not only did the cancerous cell keel over, but the normal cells weren't harmed in the process. AgriLife research scientists said that the two phenolic compounds that were responsible for the cancer cell deaths in the study were these phenols, these slightly acidic antioxidants. What happens when you look at chemotherapy? And see, everybody thinks of chemotherapy as cancer treatment. But really, chemotherapy means you're doing therapy with chemicals. And so the chemotherapies that are these artificial compounds are really tough on the body. They don't differentiate in toxic intensity. But if you kill the cancer cells, especially the very aggressive ones, and you don't kill the normal ones, then you're doing a kind of chemotherapy that is very different from the current cancer treatment. So these antioxidants and phytonutrients that were in plums exceeded blueberry in their ability to kill these cancer cells. These high antioxidant commercial varieties really made a huge big difference in terms of these aggressive breast cancer cells. So according to the National Cancer Institute, there's about 200,000 new cases of breast cancer in females and about 2,000 cases of breast cancer in males. And that's effective as of 2009, which is the last year that we have statistics from. Well, what if the extract from the Rich Lady Peach and the Black Splendor Plum, which were the species that they used, could kill cancer cells and not normal cells, and we just put them in our diet every year? These compounds are very common in fruit, this chlorogenic and neochlorogenic acid, but they're highest in plums and peaches. This is a very attractive perspective from typical chemotherapy, which kills normal cells along with cancerous cells. So we may be at the beginning of some brand new research and discovery that is going to allow us to do chemotherapy with natural compounds instead of chemotherapy with gnarly compounds. But when we come down to the last of the stone fruits, which is the apricot, 95% of all the apricots are grown in California. And when I had a motorhome years ago and I drove through California apricot country, I happened to come upon the apricot festival in the San Joaquin Valley. And Stanislaus County in California has unbelievable apricot orchards. Thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of acres exist. And the Patterson apricot accounts for probably 75% of all the apricots that are grown in California. And that harvest period starts now. It starts in May. And it's usually over by the middle of July. So apricot season is the shortest, usually, of all of the stone fruits. But when there's tens of thousands of tons of apricots being harvested every year, you're still going to have a chance to get plenty of them. It's a beautiful, beautiful tree with beautiful blossoms. If you've ever been around peaches and apricots and such when they've been blooming, you know that the delighted scent is something that you could never duplicate in a bottle. And so when we take those plump, firm fruits, we don't want anything green, and whether we're eating them out of hand, and you're going to get at least 3 apricots for less than 100 calories. Not only are you going to get our old buddy beta carotene and vitamin C and a little bit of iron and potassium and fiber, the same thing that we've talked about with the other stone fruits, we're going to find the highest concentration of beta carotene in apricots. Remember, if you take in beta-carotene, but you have no deficiency of vitamin A, beta-carotene stays beta-carotene. It won't turn into vitamin A unless you have a need for vitamin A. So when people talk about the fact that their skin turned orange when they had too much carrot juice, what's true is you really have to have a lot of carrot juice in order to get your skin to turn orange, and you'd have to have an unbelievable amount of things like apricots in order to do it. Not something that I see happening very often. So line them up. The apricots, well, they came from China. Then they came to the Mediterranean, pretty much like all the rest of these stone fruits. But do the same thing and look for those varieties, everything from white to red. The only thing that you don't want is green. And, you know, I love the Latin name as far as apricot, prunus, because it's the family that they're in. But praecox, because it comes from the Latin word for precious. And it is precious. You know, the distinctive aroma of fresh apricots is one of, well, it's kind of like a happy celebration in your nose. You get those floral notes and the peach compounds and the citrus all together. And these are also rich in pectin, which gives them that luscious texture when they're fully ripe, and a pretty meaty texture when they're dried. A lot of apricots get dried because a lot of apricots and other of these stone fruits are pretty delicate and they don't travel well. So a lot of them are processed, either put in the can or dried out. And remember, when they dry them, they usually treat them with sulfur dioxide in order to preserve the abundant beta carotene and such. Unsulfured apricots are usually brown and have a little flatter kind of a cooked taste. But there are some of you out there that are pretty sensitive to sulfur dioxide. So you always want to look at your dried fruit and find out if it contains sulfur dioxide. But they sure do lend themselves to drying and therefore are available to you all year long. But remember, we're going to increase the calories only because we reduced the moisture. So when we measure them on a cup-by-cup basis, they're going to be about three times the calories of the fresh apricots, not because something's done to them, but simply because of the fact that we have removed the water. So start on the stone fruit season with apricots, cherries, peaches, and nectarines. And don't forget the plums and the prunes coming from the plums. And you're going to find new ways to use them. You know, don't skip the canned food aisle. This is one of the few places where I will endorse the use of canned as opposed to frozen. You know, fresh is best in my opinion. Frozen is second. Canned is on the bottom of the list. But canned apricots and canned peaches and even canned cherries, yummy, especially if you can get them canned in their own juice. You're going to have about three times the calories if they're canned in sugar syrup. But for those of us that are putting away the hurricane preparedness cabinet, don't forget the canned apricots, because this is one of the delicious pop-in-your-mouth treats that we can use available year-round. So positive eating. You know, positive eating is the place where we incorporate nutrient-rich foods into the diet. And for you wild food eaters, you may be out there chewing on the Suriname cherries, a little local treat that both you and the birds love, and they have values very much like our wild cherries. I don't know enough about the unique properties of Suriname cherries, but I've sure enjoyed them in my mouth and had a conversation with one of our great supporters of WSLR. Terry and I had a conversation about eating Suriname cherries right off the bush, and I said one of the things I used to love to do is cook a chicken in it. But just like all cherries, they're only delicious when you wash them first and pop them in your mouth. You know, there's breeders out there that are trying to perfect these prunes and plums, and I guess I'm going to turn into one of them, because now that I've got a peach tree in my yard, I am ready to become the Florida peach expert and figure out how I can keep the squirrels off of it. I think I'm going to build a chicken wire cage next year to put around the peach tree to try to keep the squirrels away. If any of you've got any ideas for keeping the squirrels away other than a shotgun, then I would appreciate your wonderful suggestions. And as always, I'm interested in your suggestions.